we placed our CFG traps on opposite ends. This is just a resting area for the mosquitoes. And then we assayed the daisy fleabane extract in this setup. The results from the mesocosm wasn't significant, but there was definitely a sex ratio difference there. From 270 mosquitoes released, 50-50 sex ratio, we definitely had significantly more females responding than males. Now, when we created a blend, which is from pure compound, we definitely attracted a significant number of mosquitoes to our treatment, which was the blend, than the control traps. So we tried to replicate this in the field, and well, the blend did not perform as well, but we definitely saw something which we hoped we would see, that all physiological states were attracted to our treatment. That's the blend in that case. So in summary, and for future direction, we found that plants definitely have unique and shared volatiles. Those are the volatile organic compounds. We want to work on optimizing the release rates for our next steps. That's where we were seeing differences in mesocosm and field experiments. And one good thing that we showed here was there was a demonstrated attraction of mosquitoes from all physiological states to our field traps. In acknowledgement, these are some of the people that helped in the work in both the mesocosm and field experiments. So I'll open the floor for questions. Yes, please. Thank you. Sorry, how many flowers?
How many plants did you do each of those tests? Those six.
Let me just go back to.
What was the sample size per plant? I'm asking you
for each test.
Well, no, to get the GC mass spec profile.
So, how many is this based on? This is based on one flower head in.
No, I understand that, but how many of those did you do for each of the plants?
Oh, how many times was it repeated?
Yes.
About three times for the floral headspace.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, please.
Have you or are you going to compare FCs of a floral baited trap versus a normal TBC trap? Or?
Yes, I haven't shown some preliminary results, but yeah, that's one of the things that we have done, and we'll definitely do next summer when we can place the traps in the field.
Was the headspace from living plants or from cotton plants?
We did both, and both of them were quite consistent. Yes? I'm sorry?
How do you choose the chemical? We analyzed from GCMS.
Okay.
The
question is, how did we choose the chemicals to test? We focused on the major peaks. Definitely there are several peaks that we found from the GCMS, but we focused our attention on the major peaks because we believe that this is the thing that's the volatiles that are produced in the highest amount and therefore might be implicated in the attraction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today I'll be giving you some brief background information about Aedes albopictus, along with some management strategies for this pest, and then I'll be going over my objectives and research studies and give you some conclusions and some areas for future work. Aedes albopictus is also known as the Asian tiger mosquito, It was first described by F.A.A. Skuse in 1894 from some collections in Calcutta, India. It was introduced into Harris County, Texas, in 1985, and it's now present in 26 states. It's a major nuisance mosquito. Florida Coordinating Council of Mosquito Control believes that it's the second most pest, only to salt marsh mosquitoes. And it's also the secondary vector for dengue. West Nile has been isolated from field collections, and it is a vector for Diophilaria emitis dog heartworm. Some general management strategies for mosquito control are integrated pest management. The main one is habitat management. You'll want to dump your containers. This the picture on the top is an overturned kiddie pool that collects larvae and water. Another strategy is to use some biological controls, including predatory insects and mosquito fish, eating fish. Another is trapping. You can use propane-powered traps that are available through stores. And there's also pesticides, of course, which include larvicides, adulticides, ULV treatment, and residual sprays, which is what I'm going to be concentrating on today. The main strategies for Aedes albopictus management is to remove larval habitats, which is removing man-made habitats. But unfortunately, with Aedes albopictus, they like to inhabit natural containers. So once you get a good population going in man-made containers, they'll move on to the natural containers. And with community-wide pesticide application, they're often timed for later in the evening when Aedes albopictus is not as active. There are also many commercial products available to homeowners. They can use larvicides, propane power traps, and they can hire the services of professional pest control operators. Our first objective in these studies was, what is the residual efficacy of bifenthrin applied to landscape plants against Aedes albopictus? And then our second objective was to look at how is the susceptibility of Aedes albopictus to residual bifenthrin affected by sex and physiological stage. Since Aedes albopictus does occur in overlapping generations, this is an important factor in looking at control measures. I'd like to give you some background information about my first objective. Infestations of Aedes albopictus are particularly difficult to manage because homes are continually being built in very small and close proximity to one another, so if one neighbor has a problem with albopictus, next door neighbor's going to have a problem as well. There's also a problem with protected areas. There are no spray zones, so you can't use any kind of pesticide in places like state parks or with people who are chemically sensitive. And also, it's also a good tool for troops because when they move into a small area, they can spray the areas immediately surrounding their encampment without having to do widespread control measures. In the past, there's been success with residual pesticide applications to vegetation for mosquitoes. And a preliminary field study in 2005 with commercial products showed some promise with bifenthrin. We selected five plant species based on abundance in the local home landscapes. The pesticide we chose was Telsar-1, which is active ingredient is bifenthrin. And it is used, it has reported efficacy in the literature and also is used by local pest control operators. And it was applied at the label rate. The bioassay method we've used was used by Dr. Allen at the USDA. First plant we chose was Rhododendron fashion, which is an azalea plant. Second one is Calocarpa americana, which is found in natural areas. The third was Ilex bufordi, which is a holly plant. It's also common bush and shrub around homes. Magnolia grandiflora, normally when you think of magnolia trees, you think of very high, tall trees. But in Gainesville, where we were doing the study, a lot of people do not trim the bottom layers of the tree, so it provides a harborage area for mosquitoes. And also Spartina bakeri, which is very common in wetland areas and landscape projects. For the bioassays, we treated the plants until runoff, and the tests were run 4 hours after treatment and weekly for 5 weeks post-treatment. The leaves were attached using double-sided indoor-outdoor tape to petri dishes. And then 5 to 7 day old laboratory-reared sugar-fed mosquitoes were chilled and placed into dishes, 10 per dish. And the knockdown was recorded twice, 1 hour post-introduction and then 24 hours post-introduction. The mosquitoes were not removed to see if they recovered from the treatment. The mean percent knockdown after 1 hour, the knockdown was determined using Abbott's formula, and then the data were arcsine transformed and we took yeast to separate the means. We did find some differences between the plants and the level of knockdown after 1 hour. For rhododendron and fascin, for the first week and for the day of treatment, we had high knockdown. However, with Calocarpa and Magnolia grandiflora, the highest knockdown was experienced on the first day of treatment. And unfortunately, with Spartina bakeri, we did not witness very much knockdown. That could be due to the way the pesticide was applied to the plant, or the arrangement of the leaves of the plant, or some other factor. After 24 hours, we experienced high knockdown for 3 weeks post-treatment. And unfortunately, with Spartina bakeri, we never even reached 100% control with that plant. Some basic conclusions from these experiments were that knockdown after 1 hour of exposure was highest on the day of treatment and 7 days post-application. Knockdown after 24 hours of exposure decreased after 3 weeks, and the plant species seems to affect the efficacy of residual pesticides. These factors could include plant leaf cuticle, application method, and the arrangement of leaves on the plant. And so after we finished these experiments, we had some more questions. Particularly, will this method help in targeting mosquitoes at specific life stages? For example, blood-fed mosquitoes or gravid mosquitoes, which are important to disease transmission cycles. So the second objective was, how is the susceptibility of Aedes albopictus to residual bifenthrin affected by sex and physiological stage? Insecticide efficacy is impacted by multiple variables, including sex, age, physiological stage, and nutritional state. Earlier studies have shown that mosquito knockdown following exposure to pesticide has varied due to sex and physiological stage differences. Again, we use the same methodology. However, in these assays, we only used azalea leaves. We applied the bifenthrin in the same manner as before. And in this case, however, because we were working with gravid and blood-fed mosquitoes, the mosquitoes were 10 to 12 days old. And the treatments were male sugar-fed, female sugar-fed, female gravid, and female blood-fed. And we also examined knockdown at an additional 4 hour point. So we examined them 1 hour post introduction, 4 hours post introduction, and 24 hours post introduction. And after 1 hour of exposure to treated leaves, we found pretty similar results across the board for all four types of mosquitoes. This isn't too much of a surprise since they are all the same leaf type, and that's where we saw the major differences in the other experiments. Again, at 4 hours for the first week, we saw very good knockdown. And after 24 hours, I wanted to show you these female and gravid. This is a good area to look at because at blood-fed and gravid mosquitoes may actually rest in leaves for 24 hours. At this point, they are developing their eggs and resting. So the other mosquitoes probably aren't going to be spending as much time in the leaves, so that's why this is significant. Some conclusions we came up with were 1 hour post-introduction was highest on day zero and decreased significantly on day seven, and after 2 weeks knockdown was less than 10%. 4 hours post-introduction decreased significantly after 2 weeks, and 24 hours post-introduction began to decrease significantly after 3 weeks. Again, this is really important because there are implications for targeting gravid and blood-fed mosquitoes, especially during times of an outbreak of an arbovirus. Some areas for future study include, are residual pesticide applications to residential areas appropriate for Aedes albopictus? This type of application may be more appropriate to a mosquito that has a more synchronous emergence rate, such as the Oclerites tenuricus and Oclerites solicitans, which are salt marsh mosquitoes. Another is, should mosquito refuge areas be targeted with residual pesticide applications? Basically, because of plant types, you're going to really need to look at the type of pesticide you're applying before you go into certain areas, because some plants are affected differently by the pesticide. And also, how is the efficacy impacted by pesticide formulation and application method with respect to mosquito control? Again, we saw a very low rate of knockdown on the grasses. However, maybe this is just due to the way that we applied the pesticide. This time I'd like to thank my committee, Dr. Klein, Dr. Allen, Dr. Kaufman, all the technicians at the USDA, and my funding was provided by the USDA and the Entomology and Nematology Department at the University of Florida. Thank you.
So we have time for one or two questions.
Dr. Hogsett? We didn't really look into that. It was kind of beyond my plant skills. That would be really interesting to look at, though, because there's a wealth of information about interactions of the plant cuneiform with pesticides, and I think that's probably a good next step for these types of studies.
Good morning. I would like to start out with letting you know what I'm going to be talking about today, give you a little outline. First, I'd like to give a little introduction about sugar's role in vector competence, and obviously the importance of Culex mosquitoes as vectors. Then I'd like to move on to some of the experiments I've done, longevity experiments, and give you an idea of some of the comparisons that I've made within these species and between these species. I'll move on to some conclusions, and then we'll have time for questions and comments.